Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.
Welcome in to Football 52, the podcast with head coach of the UNC Bears, Ed Lamb. I am Brady Hull. It is Wednesday as we record this, October 29th. Halloween is coming up on Friday already. We're getting the weather's changing. It's getting cold. I finally got the sprinklers blown out, Coach. That was a stressor for me, but we got it done yesterday. So we were pushing it right up to the edge to get this thing done, but we got it done.
And did you do that yourself?
No, my father-in-law has all, because he used to do that years ago before he had his business in Fort Collins. And so he has the equipment, the necessary equipment for it. But he was going to do it for me 2 weeks ago, but then got caught up, and then he went to Florida to visit my brother-in-law. And so they were gone, and they just got back yesterday. So he called me. He's like, I don't know. You might have to find somebody else to do it, or you could try to do it. And I said, I've never done it before. So, and we're at a new place now with a lot more of a situation. So, he took care of it for me. I wasn't even a part of it.
That's one of those things that's tedious, but the feeling after of DIYing that task, I mean, it's like a turn of the seasons.
Yeah.
There's a maturation. You know, you don't do that as a young person. And then I think there are certain chores that are, feel really good when you're done. And so, well, I'm glad you got to participate. Maybe next year you'll tackle it on
your own. Next year I'll do it on my own. Yeah. I got to tell you, that is the thing. Like, all I was doing once we got moved in was fixing sprinklers, because we put a fence in, and it was like every 5 feet or so, the guy that was putting the fence in is like, oh, got another one, by the way. I took out another line.
Oh, same thing. Dirty job.
Yes.
Tedious. You've got to find stuff. You don't know where it is. Maybe you put a spade through a wire, low voltage wire, then you've got to repair that too. But the feeling of seeing that sprinkler come on correctly.
Oh, yeah.
You know, as you test it, and I mean, that feeling of satisfaction, that's big time. I miss that a lot of times in football, because so much of the year we're working so hard, but have no games. And then we only have 12, maybe 16 games if you go all the way to the national title game. And it's, you know, the feeling of working on something and seeing a daily progress with kind of an end result at the end of the day that's tangible. It's elusive in football, especially in the off season.
Well, in my old place, we had such a small backyard. So maybe we had one once a summer, I would have to fix one or whatever. And it was relatively easy to find because, you know, you see where the water is and you can go right at it. But with this situation, it was like, all right, the sprinklers just aren't popping up. What's going on? And I would run those things early in the morning. So, or actually like at 1 a.m. to like 5, because there's 12 zones. So a lot of times I wouldn't find it until, oh, there's a yellow spot there. What's going on? And then you start investigating, you dig in there, you fix it. There is a feeling. There is a good feeling that comes with that.
There's a great feeling. Although I can tell that you have completely transformed into a suburb guy, because you're calling it sprinklers. And I know as a kid that was irrigation, right? And now you're calling it sprinklers.
Yes.
like the neighborhood folks, the subdivision folks.
Oh, well, and that's like, I got tennis elbow now from all the moving and all the work I did throughout the summer. I haven't worked like that since I was 18 years old, when I was on the farm or doing odd city jobs and stuff. I didn't do a lot of that really, like mowing the lawn at the old place, whatever, fixing, it didn't take me very long. This was work. I'm still recovering and getting older in the process. So that's been fun. Because the amount of stuff that I had to throw away into a dumpster, constant lifting, constant chucking. And then finally by the time we got to late September, I'm like, my right arm doesn't work the same way that it used to. So any tips on healing the tennis elbow, Coach? Have you ever experienced that?
Well, the soreness is healing. So absence of pain is death. Keep that in mind.
Okay.
When we put players through a hard workout and they are complaining about their soreness,
yeah,
we usually say, you're welcome.
It's So I should be happy that this is happening.
Yeah, that soreness is an indication that your body's repairing that tissue and will be stronger than it was before.
Really?
So you're welcome.
Okay,
thank yourself.
What do I do in the process, though, to make it feel better? Ice, heat, heat, then ice? How do I, or do I just man up and not mess with it?
Yeah, tough it out.
My wife got me one of those little bands you're supposed to put around it to help it out. I put it on once. I was like, I can't do this. And that didn't seem like it was helping. So I'm just going to tough it out.
Yeah, I would just personally, I would rather be the guy without the bandage. And, you know,
got to do that.
Yeah.
Here I am complaining. And yeah, you got a lot of dudes that are getting banged up throughout the course of the year, battling some of the best teams in all of the FCS. It has been, I'll say this, Coach, and I know you don't like to take this as a secondary prize or anything, but I've said this a lot on my show, but the Bears this year are must-see television. They are must-see because every game, whoever it is, whether it's an FBS team or it's a ranked team at the FCS side that's probably going to be in the playoffs, you guys have been right there. And I know that you roll your eyes at that. You're like, we've got progress, but UC Davis last year was a completely different game for you guys. And in this case, this came down to the wire yet again.
Yeah, I mean, clearly we're closing the gap, right? And we've got a team of fighters, and for that I'm so proud. And I think, you know, in your position, and maybe hopefully with the community, fans or whatever, they can take that. I don't love the phrase because it's so overused, but that 30,000 feet view.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, clearly the Bears are improving themselves. Our players are just, you know, developing themselves into a really competitive team. But at the same point right now, like my full focus is within the program, and we're in a fragile state. You know, it sounds crazy for a coach that, you know, we've lost double digit games in a row during my time here. And now, you know, I'm saying we're on the precipice because we've had two straight losses, and now we face a really good, probably the best team that we've faced with Montana State coming in here. And it's not that in any way I'm afraid of the way we'll compete. You know, we fully expect to fight and have a chance to win and, have a high level of confidence in the players that we're coaching. But I think a natural part of, you know, dropping football games, losing football games is everyone in the organization starts to look at the reasons why. Mm-hmm. And for coaches, it's our job to look at the reasons why and to point those out. But everybody in this organization also has worked so hard. They don't want that reason to be them. And so it can become really a dangerous spot to be. And that's where we as coaches need to really lead out this week and make sure that we're acknowledging areas that we as coaches could have been, should have been better, and pointing out the winning efforts that are going on. There can be winning efforts within a losing outcome. And we've certainly had that.
Well, yeah, in this game in particular, you know, I believe it was 24-0 at one point. Was that right? 24-0, UC Davis. And I'm thinking, is this going to look a lot like what it did last year? Yeah. And you guys got that score late in the first half. And it just kind of felt like this is right then. It's like, this is not last year's Bears team. This team is resilient. They're tough. They're going to fight back. And then you ended up getting to 16. You only allowed 3 points in the second half defensively, so that was huge. Couple of tough turnovers. Eric Gibson had one of those mixed kind of days. You know, numbers wise, not bad, but I think he had the fumble and then an interception. So a couple of those things kind of mixed together. A missed extra point too. But for you guys to fight back and make this a fourth quarter football game was actually pretty telling about where this team has gone or come from and maybe where they're headed.
Yeah, they're tough. You know, kind of battle bred, not afraid to lose, have lost enough as a group and individually, especially those guys who have been around here where it's like, there's not a fear of that. There's not a tendency to want to fold up in those situations. And I think we've got a coaching staff, like, you know, that was over there on the sidelines, like quickly identifying what was going on and finding ways to get better. Now, offensively, you know, it was a pretty good offensive production day at 350 plus yards.
Yeah.
We just didn't, you know, we missed the opening field goal, drove all the way down the field and missed an opening field goal. That really hurts from a momentum standpoint. We had the costly turnover in our own end. We had, you know, at 17-0 with the clock winding down at the end of the first half, I faced kind of a no-win situation because we're at midfield. If I punt it away there, I don't know if there's enough possessions in the game for us to kind of come back, right? Like at that point, you're not thinking, okay, we're going to completely shut them out. They've scored 17. I'm thinking, okay, if we can turn it around on defense, maybe we'll, you know, just start to stop the bleeding and maybe we can hold them to 10 or 14 points for the rest of the game. Well, it turns out we did kind of, you know, shut them out largely, after the first half. But we went for it. You know, we went for it on fourth and four and didn't get it. And then that gave them a short field. So it just everything was kind of steamrolling. But I think our players understood exactly what was going on. And then the other thing that hurt was, you know, anytime you face a team coming off of a bye, their offense is going to be a kind of a step fast. And they were. And we had a hard time adjusting to the speed of the game. And then also they, you know, their starting quarterback that we had prepared for was sick. And that's not always as, you know, if you have a good backup quarterback, it can be difficult on a defense because Caden Pinnick, their starter, is kind of like the Joshua Wood from Idaho.
Yeah.
They're off-schedule throwers. They do their most damage when they get off-schedule, scramble outside the pocket. And so the whole defensive game plan is kind of set to get a plus-one late rusher somewhere where the quarterback gets off-schedule. Well, the backup quarterback for Davis was an on-schedule pocket passer. And so he really, you know, found some timing and rhythm throws on us there that we adjusted to better, in the second half. But it really, things were steamrolling there, on us in the first half. I'm proud of the way the guys responded.
When did you know that, Pinnick was out? Because I believe he was he warming up? He was,
no,
was he not suited up at all?
He did not make the trip at all.
Okay, didn't even make the trip.
And so we had heard, you know, a few minutes before the game, from media members actually that, you know, he had not made the trip. And, you know, at that point, it's kind of like, who knows the reason why and who knows if it's just all smoke, you know, because did I tell you about the Idaho coach that kind of had, their guy was out, but unable to play, like medically unable to play, but they had him come out fully dressed and take the first
team
warm up.
That's where I'm confused. Yes. Because you did talk to us about that.
Yeah. And I was, and, you know, like every coach has to do their own thing, you know, but I was kind of like, okay, we'd heard he's out. If he's out here taking the first team warmups, what are you telling your team about the second guy?
Right.
And what are you telling your team about Northern Colorado? Like, you need to throw smoke and mirrors like that in order to beat Northern Colorado? It just was a strange decision, right? I don't know if it was the wrong one and if it had anything to do with the game. But my point in bringing it up is that I wasn't sure if kind of Davis was doing the same thing. It didn't seem like a Tim Plow thing to do. It didn't seem like a sixth ranked team in the country thing to do is kind of, well, let's confuse Northern Colorado. But yeah, I mean, that was going through our minds. And so it was just kind of like, okay, well, you know, prepare for everything and adjust as needed. And that's the mindset we went into it with.
And Grant Harper, and that can be so difficult too. And obviously you guys have experienced that. You know, last year was kind of a different story, but this year with the backup quarterback, Eric Gibson Jr. has been pretty solid, completely different than what your situation was last year. So, When we're seeing the report, oh, it's going to be Grant Harper starting in this game instead, that's not necessarily settling for me, right? And not that you're rooting for any quarterback to get hurt or be sick or anything like that, but a lot of times you hear that and you go, oh, Bears' chances just went up. I'm thinking of two things. I'm thinking, well, the Bears have proved that they can still compete with a backup quarterback. They're doing that this year. But also, like you said, you're preparing for a completely different type of quarterback that can throw you off quite a bit. And was that kind of what was going on early in that half? And then the adjustments came in the second half to a guy like Grant Harper.
Yes, that was definitely a part of what was going on. And just to give, you know, you see Davis some credit for executing some chunk plays, some big plays. They had a couple of hideout plays, which we had prepared for all week, but again, you know, when you're preparing for a team off of a bye, there's going to be some new stuff that you haven't seen, more new stuff that you haven't seen defensively. And so we saw some wrinkles that were just, you know, similar and that we should have been prepared for, but just caught us a step off pace. And they did a great job. Davis did a great job executing it. And that was, I think, part of the turnaround too, and at least defensively was, you know, they had kind of wore out the new gimmick plays that they came into the game with. You can only carry so many of those. And when it became a game of just, okay, well, now it's blocking versus tackling and it's, our offense consistently was moving the ball, at least out of our own end, if not scoring. So at that point, I think just, you know, we made the adjustments and it was game on. And in the end, you know, just didn't close some things out. The off ball OPI or offensive pass interference calls just crushed us. I mean, you don't get an off the ball OPI sometimes for years at a time to have two in one game. And it's the most costly penalty in college football. In fact, most people think that the college football game has to change that. In the NFL, it's only a 10-yard penalty. Both of those happened on first and 10. And to go to first and 25 is like almost insurmountable. I mean, the analytics, the odds of getting a first down on that are so small. And so in the second half there with the score 24-13 and we're driving, we get a first down on the 6-yard line, you know, first and goal at the 6, but the flag comes out for OPI. That one was really hurt us. And then in the first half at 10-0 with us driving, we got it. You know, in two critical situations, those OPI calls just, I don't want to say buried us, but it just made it so much more difficult. You only get, you know, 9, 10, 11 drives in a game. And, you know, we faltered on our own, in our own right several times. And certainly penalties we have to own too, but to have two taken away on OPI penalties I've never seen it happen before.
Yeah, well, and obviously the optics of it, just the yardage to gain after that point, but mentally it can be so deflating too when you do move to that, to the 6-yard line and then you get an offensive, pass interference and you have to go back. Mentally that could be so tough because it's such a hard thing to do, especially against these ranked opponents, is to get first downs, is to move the ball, to get inside the 10-yard line. Yeah. So then you get there, the work is done. Oh, it's coming back. It is. I don't know what the analytics say to that, but I have to imagine when you get a big gain, you move in close, then you get a bad penalty against you. Mentally getting over that hump is very difficult.
Yeah, and here's the deal. Like regular OPI, where like I'm the defensive back, you're the receiver, you push me off and go make a catch. That one's common, and that's, you know, that's it's common and it's part of the game.
Yeah.
Off ball OPI is like poor coaching, like you're designing pick plays or something like that, or your receivers aren't quite running routes. And that's not what happened either. Like in both cases, their defender jumped in front of our guy. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, well, you know, you got to avoid a little better there. And we're trying to coach that up. But it's also like when you're a college football player and you're in your third, fourth year, like Braden Monroe and Charlie Garrison, you've never had an off-ball OPI penalty called against you. We were running the same plays that we've ran hundreds of times over the years with those same guys. They were both releasing for routes, expected to be, you know, receivers. For them in that moment, to answer your question, it's like, what did I just do?
Yeah.
How did I just take us from a great situation to a horrible situation? And so it is. It's a gut check. It's a mental check at that point.
Well, I was wondering too, like you said it, like if the defender just kind of steps in front, it's almost like taking a charge in basketball. As I was watching one of those, I can't remember which one, but my brain's going to, I'm curious to hear if defensive coordinators are coaching that at all now. Step in front of these guys, maybe you'll get an OPI call.
Well, it's part of defense. It's every play, and that's what, you know, I don't always send plays into our coordinator of officials, but I sent in those two for review. And then I don't want to embarrass the big sky. So I don't want to tell you what the feedback was. Mm. Maybe that's already too much information, but, that was my point. And my question is like, you got to help me out with the judgments here because I'm seeing this. I sent several more plays both sides of the ball where it was like, look at this. There's contact everywhere. I mean, that's part of coaching defensive football, not to draw OPI, but you want to disrupt routes. It's you always step in front of the receiver, and it is the receiver's job, and we teach that. I mean, obviously, if you're a receiver and you're trying to get open, you're trying to avoid that, right? And so it's such a strange penalty to get off-ball OPI. And I lost my composure for a while in the game because I thought, okay, I was talking to the guy on our sidelines. There's some kind of agenda here. Mm. You guys had a meeting last night. You know, you should have let me know this if you were looking for this call. What the heck is going on today? And they're professionals and they're trained and they know coaches are working and it's their livelihood and their job. So they're always very calm. And I appreciate that. The big sky does a fantastic job with their officials, training them, holding them accountable. And that's why I don't want to, you know, peer too much into the process and, name names and if this call was valid or not. Like, that's not my point. Bad calls happen. UC Davis can send in 12 plays too that they feel like were not officiated correctly. I'm not saying that that was part of the loss, but it was a mental gut check in those points. And it's one of the reasons we stalled out. And as coaches, we have to look at, okay, is our offense ineffective? Or, you know, are we moving the ball and stalling out? And if so, for what reasons? Those two examples really hurt.
I'm guessing, again, you don't have to answer, but I'm guessing you just didn't like the response that you got back from the officials, or is this?
No, I do.
Okay.
I do like the response.
It was a good response. Okay.
Yeah. Randy Campbell's our coordinator of officials. Jim Crowley was the head referee in that game. Those guys have been around a long time. They know football better than me and every other coach. They know officiating better than me and every other coach. There are times where I disagree and I feel like officials and coaches need to get on the same page here. I think off-ball OPI is something that needs to be reviewed on a national level at the college level. It's just like, it's, you know, the defender has some responsibility there too. And if it's going to be applied, it needs to be applied all game. And to me, you've heard people say it before where like there could be 20 holding calls a game. Mm-hmm. There could be 20, 30 off-ball OPIs if that's the standard that they're using. But, you know, at the same time, like I say, the professionalism, the more contact I have with college football officials, the less I would ever think that there's some kind of agenda going on.
Mm.
Now, there definitely could be going into a game, they try to do a good job and they say, hey, such and such team is getting away with a lot of holding or with a lot of off-ball OPI or any other thing. And I think that's part of their job. But I was just, you know, it was shocking to have two in a row like that.
Well, and with so many close games for you guys, it is for fans too. It's easy to put a lot of those plays under the microscope because you've had some of those where they're just interesting calls. We talked about the Braden Monroe, the out of bounds, inbounds kind of situation last week. It does get frustrating, especially when you feel, because you're very honest, you're not an excuse guy. Like, you don't come
appreciate
on here,
that.
You never come on here and say, well, if we wouldn't have had that play.
Yeah.
But as you explained the Braden Monroe thing last week, and then we see this, it's just like, do I think officials are going at the Bears? No, I don't believe that.
Yeah, they're not.
But I do think that whether it's the Bears, the Broncos, the Buffs, whatever, I just think sometimes you get into a string of those and those can be the difference in the game.
Yeah.
When you have just a couple, one or two can be a difference because it's a game of inches. It can come down to one play or a missed call or an interesting call.
Yeah. And one of the things that's interesting is like, everybody has their opinions on replay and how it slows down the game and stuff, but some stuff is not reviewable.
Yeah.
And that's kind of really frustrating that a call that could put you in first and 25 is not reviewable. I don't want to be that guy that's pointing at officials and calls. It's not like that. I don't want my team to be reacting like that. But you asked the opinion on, well, what is it like mentally? And I can tell you that when we had that first and goal, seemingly first and goal at the six,
mm-hmm.
looking to make a 24-0 game into a 24-21 game, that was crushing to have to, you know, settle at that point, for a field goal. And
it just changed
everything. It's fourth quarter, you know, like you only get so many more possessions in the fourth quarter, in any quarter. To get 2, 3, 4 possessions is kind of the normal. And, to get down there and have that opportunity, for what would be first and goal on the six.
Changes the game. That would have changed the game.
Right. Yeah. Changes the game. Yeah. And like I said, we'll coach it harder. We'll coach it better. We'll look to coach within the way the standard of officiating is currently kind of pointing.
I've always said this. I don't care what sport. And I don't think you should have unlimited amount of challenges and stuff, but I think if we're going to have review, I think we either review everything or we review nothing. Like, why is it some plays can be reviewed and then others can't? And I know the NFL tried to thing where they were reviewing pass interference and mm-hmm. things like that, and they didn't like it. It went south. But I still think same amount of challenges, whatever. But if you're going to review stuff, put it all on the table. That's what's always bothered me about football.
Yeah.
It's like there's a few things we can review, but not everything.
Yeah.
It's insane to me.
Yeah, it's the replay officials have, I mean, you saw it in our replay versus Colorado State. I mean, the way the rule is written, like, Does a player use the ball to catch the ground or use the ground to catch the ball? Well, when a player goes up and high points a ball at 8 feet in the air, brings it down to the ground.
Yeah.
Did he use the ground to catch that? That's, you know.
He's already caught it.
What are we talking about?
Yeah, and that's touching the grass. That's just out of control.
So there are just, in the end, there's a human element to it. And I like that. And I think it's part of the learning of football. And I'm still learning and trying to grow every day. Got a long list of regrets that grows every day. But I think that's part of sports participation as an athlete is that you learn to deal with the fact that you don't control everything. And that's why that the phrase we all overuse it, but control the controllables. It's a life lesson. And we can win games, without, you know, getting all the quote unquote favorable calls. There's going to be some calls that kind of lean one way or the other. And it's just the human element of sports, which I appreciate. And I want to make sure our players appreciate that.
Yeah. Coach, can we talk about Eric Gibson for just a moment here? Eric is kind of the way some of these games have gone too, where we're talking about an official call or whatever. You guys can play a really clean game and a really good game. I know there were a lot of interesting penalties in this game, but Eric Gibson can look so good for most of the game. And I'm talking about that fumble that he had, just kind of holding it out there in front of him. We discussed this a couple of weeks ago where, man, he could be doing everything right, everything right, everything right. And then suddenly he just kind of hangs that ball out there. And it's prime for the fumble opportunity for a defensive player to knock that out. How are you working with Eric on that side of it? Cause that's a tough thing to do, man. He's trying to make plays and rolling around, and mentally sometimes you're looking around downfield and that ball just kind of hangs out there.
Right. Yeah. We've got to drill it. There's a way to carry the football. Ours is two hands in traffic, high and tight, two hands in traffic. And for a quarterback, that means, you know, keeping it what we call shelved up here on the chest. And he can run like that as well. You have to run like that because there's guys coming from the blind side. And if you're waving the ball, you know, the way that he was carrying the ball, he's kind of fortunate. He didn't cause his own fumble. You see that where guys kind of the ball hits off their thigh board or something and then they cause their own fumble because they're carrying it haphazardly. He's all over that. It's something that we, have worked really hard with him on. It's plagued him at times during the season. And it's also part of being a guy that carries the football all game where the mistakes stand out, his mistakes stand out, and he's got to be, if you're going to be touching the football 80 times a game, then your ball security is the most important ball security on the team. And so it's just an area that we all have to take responsibility for. If there's an old coaching adage, if you see it on film, you're either coaching it that way or allowing it to happen. And I think in this case, he would agree, and we can acknowledge that we're allowing it to happen more than coaching it that way. We can drill it up. We can teach it. We can talk about it. But at some point we have to stop allowing it to happen. And, that's a difficult bridge to cross sometimes. You know, do you remove the player? Do you take out all plays? Do you take away his ability to scramble laterally, which is when it's kind of happened? Those kind of judgments now are kind of, you know, we're getting to that point in the season where we have to make some tough judgments about that.
Oh, when you get into these tough games too against these really good teams, they're
good. Margin for error is small.
They take advantage of those most of the time. And this next question has nothing to do with Eric Gibson's performance because I've really enjoyed watching him, but I was out at the University Center on Monday and we were talking to a bunch of different players, coach, and, I happened to see Peter Castelli walk by. So it just entered my brain. I wanted to just ask about an update on how he's doing. And again, it's not a knock on Eric. Like, oh my gosh, we need Castelli in there. Yeah. It's literally because I just happened to see him the one time I was out at campus. The first time I've been at the UC Center or the UC in years, just happened to see him walking around going to grab some lunch.
Yeah. Yeah. Peter's, like I've said, we did not lose him for the season. He practiced last week and he'll be practicing this week. And, you know, I think at some point here we'll get the full green light for a game day readiness. We hope that's this week or in the future, but, Eric Gibson has been a tremendous leader for us and done a fantastic job. So this is not a, you know, like I've said many, many times in the past, it is a competition every day. That competition includes Levi Durrell, who's, you know, been Eric's backup. And, that's part of getting better and better performance is that everybody needs to understand that there's a new competition every week, a new competition every day, and every player is only one play away. That's all cliched stuff, coach speak, but it's true in our program, and our players would tell you that same thing. So I know that at the point where, you know, Peter's back, that Eric and, Peter, that both of their games will rise because they're both good football players. And in the case of kind of going back to Eric's fumble that was really costly and all that, our whole team is behind winning and losing with Eric. You know, like, we want to win. We want him to play well. Everybody wants to play well and coach well. But, you know, we're not in position to win some of these games had Eric not performed
sure.
to the level he's performing. And so we rise and fall together.
So there is a realistic shot. And again, that doesn't mean he would be starting because you'd have that evaluation process, but there is a realistic shot that we could still very well see Peter Castelli.
We're definitely going to see Peter Castelli this year. Yeah, there's no question about it. You know, he's last week he had limited practice reps, and this week he is what we call, you know, his full speed practice reps, but he's still very much, we're in an evaluation stage of his kind of physical and mental readiness, his performance readiness. And so and sitting here right now with one like full practice under his belt, like I can't really say that.
You can't give me anything for like this weekend even.
Oh, well, I think I am.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to get your hopes up or
yeah.
Peter's hopes up or any, you know, this is going out there, right? So I don't want to get anybody's hopes up. And I want to show confidence in, you know, publicly and privately
sure.
in Eric. And so not, you know, I don't want to appear giddy that a certain player is coming back from injury.
It's a tough spot.
Yeah, I'm giddy for that player, as I would be for anyone. Jack Bacon has come back to our offensive line after being out since the South Dakota game,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he played, came in and finished the game for us last week. So really excited about all guys who come back into the lineup after working so hard on their rehab and to get through the mental challenges of being injured. And Peter's done a fantastic job with it.
Well, my evaluation, from what I saw, was that he was walking perfectly. So in sweatpants, walking.
Hold on, let me make a note.
And I thought, you know what? That guy looks like he's ready to go.
Yeah.
I'm going to text Coach right now. He probably doesn't know this just yet. Coming up, it doesn't get any easier, like we talked about. You're in the middle of the gauntlet, although the Big Sky kind of just feels like a gauntlet as soon as you get into conference play. But Montana State, you know, as it sits, last I checked, I believe they're fourth now. And we know Northern Arizona's coming up too. So you're in the midst of this. Talk to us a little bit about Montana State. That's a guy, their head coach, Coach Vegan, his name is coming up in a lot of search conversations because there's a lot of vacancies. There's a lot of coaches. A lot of teams moving on from coaches. His name has popped up with several FBS schools.
Sure, as it should. A fantastic coach, and really, to have the chance to coach at those places like Montana and Montana State that win, and I think it can be a confidence builder and a place where a guy can really cement some of their convictions. You know, a lot of the convictions I have coming through Southern Utah and Northern Colorado, they get tested, on a regular basis. And so I'm strong in them from a different type of experience. But yeah, you know, the Montana State coaches, being talked about for FBS jobs, that's been going on for decades.
Every year you could almost.
Yeah.
Pencil that one of those names in.
Yeah, they've earned their way into those positions. And, you know, Jeff Choate, the head coach at Nevada right now, is a former Montana State head coach. Bobby Houck was the head coach at UNLV at one time. It's, those places have, they're great examples of what UNC should be aspiring to be, you know, and especially in Montana State's case, who was, you know, Montana out of nowhere with a single private donor built an amazing stadium. And went from kind of being very mid in terms of their success to ripping off like 10 out of 17 championships,
yeah.
You know, 10 out of 12 in a row. And then Montana State, and I was part of the Big Sky when this happened, Montana State said, well, we got to build our stadium out and be like that and look like that. And then also went through a population growth in the Bozeman area and elevated their student enrollment, and they reinvested in both football and the university at large. And now you have this like behemoth at the FCS level that's talking about going FBS at the FCS level that's talking about going FBS. And Northern Colorado has all of that. We have a growing population. We were one of the last areas in this state that could really, can really grow, have the water rights, et cetera. There's Greeley is really set up, and this area is really set up. And UNC is set up for, to have a larger student base and, you know, to continue to reinvest in the university and in football, and for me to be playing my role in showing the way on that. You know, it's not that, not that every, president, administrator, provost, you know, is raised through their experience saying, hey, to have a great university, you got to have a great football program.
Yeah.
You know, I think the football coach and the football program has some responsibility to show the way on that. And so I'm excited to be here, and aspire to be like, what Montana State has built. It's a great opportunity for us this weekend.
Those have been the two. Yeah. You mentioned Montana as well, but the two consistents, once they kind of got everything figured out with their facilities and such, we're always talking about them leading the Big Sky. Yeah. We're always talking about them potentially being in the playoffs, even potentially getting to those championship games. We've seen it a lot recently. But that's obviously where I know you would like to be at some point, where this is a consistent Bears team, year in and year out. We're having those conversations.
Yeah. I mean, it's different here, right? Like, so many of the times we're talking, I allude back to, okay, they're at Southern Utah, that, but when we started winning championships at Southern Utah, all the other coaches in the conference got fired, you know, for a reason.
Yeah.
It was like, that's unacceptable. And so it's not going to be like when Northern Colorado does it, at least at first, it's not going to be like Montana State doing it, right? Like, you know, let's be real. Their football budget is 7-8 times what ours is.
Yeah.
It's insane, right? But budgets don't win games in the short term. In the long term, yeah, like when I'm dead and all of our players have moved on and they have grandkids and stuff like that, I think a university has to kind of build a football program from their perspective. But right now, for me and our players, we're not worried about how many dollars we have. We're worried about the Montana State Bobcats.
Well, and that's what's so impressive about, I think we've had this conversation too, where you've talked to several of your friends in the coaching business where they're like, hey, we're coaching these big brands, and yeah, it's hard to get here, but once you get here, the pressure's crazy, but it's a lot easier to win a game because of the facility, the money that we have now that we can give to players, all this stuff, where you're dealing with that competition in the Big Sky. It's not that everybody has the same situation. Everyone's dealing with the same thing in the Big Sky. That's just simply not the case. There's a huge difference between if you go on campus, walk around Montana State, go look at their stuff, go look at Montana's, and then you look at where you guys sit at this stage.
Yeah, it's just completely different. I mean, can you imagine Brett Vegan at going 0-11 and then 1-11 and getting a contract extension at Montana State? No. But that did happen here. And
yeah.
Why? How? Well, there's a different reality here and a long-term process that I've set out on and our administration is supportive of and somehow sees progress. And I'm grateful for that. So yeah, we are all dealing with very different situations. It's the same at every level. You look at the firings going on
all
mid-season,
over.
Early season, buyouts happening. Well, those are happening at the places that spend the most money. If you're spending the most money on athletics in your conference and you're not winning it, there's going to be problems.
It should be a goal of a Division I coach. Just get really good for a second. Go to one of these power schools. Whatever happens, 3 years, and then you get a $54 million buyout. Like we're seeing, obviously those are extreme cases. But we're seeing, I can't remember the number that was up yesterday, but there's a large amount of money being paid to coaches to just simply not coach. And I don't know where I stand on mid-season firings. I'm just not... I don't get it. I get you want to get a head start on interviewing other coaches and everything, but man, some of these buyout numbers are just absolutely crazy. But I guess they feel like they have the money so they can do it. We're talking 54. I think Franklin was at 49 million. It's insane to me.
Yeah. I mean, it posed kind of a few questions there. And
yeah.
I'm certain not the arbiter of all those things. But I can tell you that with mid-season firing, sometimes just inside the building, that if players have lost confidence in the coach or that there's mistreatment going on, I'm not saying that's the case in any of these. I think I think it is warranted, justified. We had a potential mid-season firing when I was at Idaho, and because the head coach was the offensive coordinator, Tom Cable, and I was the defensive coordinator, I would have likely been the interim. And I couldn't help but, you know, when I knew that they wanted to fire him mid-season, I couldn't help but think, okay, what kind of opportunity is this for me, and what could I do to change these players' lives? And then have to wrestle with the fact that Tom Cable hired me and gave me an opportunity. I was the youngest defensive coordinator, and at that time, Idaho was in the Sun Belt. We were FBS. I was the youngest in the country, and we were decent on defense. We were second in the conference that year on defense, and so there was a selfish part of me that wanted that opportunity. But then there was a part of me that knew that he had not lost the players, that he was a player's coach, and he was an Idaho Vandal. He was an alum. And, I knew the university was wrong for firing him. I knew that they were, you know, we were trying to compete at a level that we shouldn't have been competing at. We should have been FCS. And they've since realized that and come back to FCS, of course. And so, yeah, I think as coaches, we're all aware of that. You know, but when a guy's lost the locker room or he's mistreating players or coaches, there can be an opportunity for an AD to make a midseason change and see immediate results.
It's a crazy business, coach. You know this well, way better than I do, but it's fascinating because one man's pitfall, one guy's, you know, when he falls off, that's another guy's opportunity. And not to say you're ever really rooting for that, but you're always thinking that it's going to be, hey, if I'm a really good coordinator at this school and then maybe the wins just aren't coming or whatever, I'm going to get that opportunity. That's typically how it goes. Or you're just a really good coordinator and then you get poached and you go on to another school. I think of it in competition terms. You guys played CSU earlier this season. I have to think that the way that game went down certainly had the wheels turning. A churning for the administration over there. Not to be a knock on you guys, I think as the season progressed, it was like, oh, that wasn't that bad of a game because the Bears are legit. But that's a team that thinks they should be in the college football playoffs at the FBS level. So if they're having a hard time with an FCS team, they start thinking. So there's so many things that go into this. You're going up against a coach that's on the hot seat. If you beat that guy or whatever, that could be one of his last games. And that ultimately turned out to be the case up north at Colorado State. So it's a crazy business. Yeah. You're shaking hands with one guy. A couple weeks later, he's gone.
Yeah. And we usually know each other as men, which makes it kind of, you know, it puts the human element in there, and it's hard, hard to see that happen to any coach. You know, particularly a guy like Jay that, you know, he had success at a program with limited resources in the conference. And so, you know that there's something there. You know that there's an ability there. You know that there's a talent. So many of the coaches, come up kind of the other way where like the ADs that just kind of hire the next, you know, the coordinator at a top 10 school, you name it. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, okay, what is that person proven, you know? Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of ADs that just go shopping at the top, in the top 10 for head coaches, coordinators, stuff like that. It's when I see those guys, you know, be unsuccessful, and especially if I don't know them personally, I'm kind of like, yeah, you know what? Those kind of things need to happen for ADs to start to look at really, who's demonstrated a skill set that can be successful at that particular school. And it's a tough job that ADs have because every school has opportunities and challenges. And the AD really has to nail it. And I don't think it's just a matter of saying, well, you know, who's the DC at Ohio State?
Like, yeah.
You know what? The DC at Ohio State's always pretty dang successful.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I think a goldfish in a bowl could win 10 games at Ohio State.
I think I could coach. Like I said, I'd all blitz every time, but I'd have the guys to do it. I would have like the top players in the country to do that. So we blitz every time. It is just an interesting concept too, because there's been a lot of the discussion of like, okay, up there, up north, like what do they need in a head coach? What are they missing? And here's where I kind of, my thoughts here, and just because I'm seeing it close with you, and again, we have four games left. We have a lot of stuff to go on here for you guys. But I just got to say this, whatever the interview process looks like, and if that's the guy you hired, that needs to be the guy that you hired 2 years later. So if you're coming in preaching, which you did, your press conference, hey, this is how we're going to build this thing. because it's a different world in college football. We're going to recruit locally. That's going to be a big deal for us. We have a certain philosophy, a certain way of doing things, how we want our players to act. We've spent a lot of time talking about that. That guy doesn't say that 3 years ago and then suddenly, oh, well, that doesn't matter anymore because this guy screwed up, but he's really freaking good. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, we got a chance to get 70% not Colorado and we're going to go this route. You so far have lived up to everything that I have to imagine was in that interview process. If you come in and it's a, this is who we're going to be, and then suddenly 3 years later, you're nothing like that. That's what I would look for, an honest coach that can really stay true to his convictions. And that's hard to do.
Yeah. I mean, I appreciate that. I'll give you an example. Last week, I can't even give the position because I don't want to throw a player under the bus, but we had a player miss weights. We have several different weight sessions throughout the day because the weight room's not big enough for a whole football team. And so we had a player miss weights. And there was another player at that same position that, wasn't ready, physically, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm not going to go into injury, illness, anything like that because I don't want somebody to kind of try to trace this back to who I'm talking about. But we went into that game and we just had to stand by our convictions of you got to be on time. You got to be available. You got to follow through on your commitments. And so we were lesser. Considerably lesser at that position with two starting caliber players out. But I thought that was critical for our team building forward. I mean, we have a young team.
Yeah.
You know, if we can retain and hold these guys together, not all of them. I mean, it's going to be appropriate for some of them to test the transfer portal and that's part of football now. But, you know, for those guys who still have growth potential and development potential here, there's a championship on the horizon, and we're never going to get there if we relax our standards.
Yeah.
You know, we are not going to have this be an optional weightlifting, optional on time, you know, slide by with a 2.5 GPA. That can't be our program.
Yeah, well, and again, we brought it up a lot, but you didn't relax your standards with Carver Cheeks either. You said, hey, if you enter the portal, you're not going to just come back and be on this team. If you do that, okay, Carver, you have to work your way back up to actually be on this team. You got to kind of be a walk-on at this stage. And if you just happen to not be good at football suddenly, then you won't be on the team. So you have to take that risk. And that's why I think is very clear. You were clear about that. Some people kind of fudged it up a little bit. No, coach is going back on his word on this. 100% you weren't.
Yeah, the hardest part of our conversation was when Carver realized when we were having that, he said, well, like, what if I get hurt? And
yeah.
I was like, is that different for any other walk-on?
Right.
Is any other walk-on going to earn a scholarship if they get hurt in training camp? And so to see the way that he showed up every day and like play, you see how he plays. He plays reckless. He plays on the edge. It is completely redlining every time, everything he's got. And he plays like that in practice every day. And guess what? Like all the players saw that going on and realized that he had to stay healthy and win a starting job and deliver. It made our whole team better. He has made every single player on our team better by his example.
I feel like he and Braden Monroe are just taking turns being superstars every single week, too. Yeah. Braden's always been good.
Yeah.
But he's doing things that he wasn't doing last year. I mean, he has been excellent. I mean, he won the yards war last week. So it is fun to watch those two. And it seems like that's a prime example of Carver helping other players become better. And Braden's a sensational player anyway, but he's taking it to another level.
Yeah. I mean, no shade against those guys, but these are guys that they're self-made or we built them together, however you want to say it. I would, you know, if somebody wants to say they're self-made, I'll celebrate that. But they were not recruited by other Division I schools.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's exactly what I said. Colorado is under-recruited. And now to have, let's say we have the two best receivers in the Big Sky. That is certainly arguable, right? Mm-hmm. There are a lot of coaches that might say that. And I'll say that.
Yeah.
We have the two best receivers in the Big Sky in that duo right there. How did that happen? When other schools in this conference are paying tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars for receivers and rosters and position groups, and we got those two guys on an old-fashioned scholarship. Just come here, represent the Bears, help us build the program, and they have delivered in every way. We're not there yet. but they've done their part.
You got a few of those guys that I think you can make a case that are the best at their position in the Big Sky Conference.
Absolutely. And so many of them are Colorado high school. Our offensive line is Colorado high school built. I mean, it is incredible what's going on. Our defensive line there, Cam in the secondary, Cam Chapa at the safety
position. He's probably getting an interception right now. I mean, the guy's playing outstanding.
Yeah. And these are guys that, you know, UNC was their best offer. And I'm clear with our guys. UNC was my best opportunity to be a head football coach.
Yeah.
We're all in this together. So let's not walk around here acting like, well, you know, if I wanted to, I could have been at Florida State right now. Like this is all of our best place, and be real about it, be honest, and we have a chance to overcome everybody's expectations.
We talked about this a lot last week. Yeah, if you transfer, let's say you go to one of these other schools, even a Big Sky school or whatever, you become part of the shuffle. If you do it here and you guys do it to the extent that you're talking about, those are the names that pop up on big radars, like Sunday radars, where it's like they turned it around. They had excellent safety play. Who's that guy? Look at these two receivers. Those are guys that could potentially, I mean, I know I'm getting a little crazy here, but they could potentially get drafted.
Yeah. No, it's not crazy. We, again, going back to the Southern Utah thing, we set a record, a record that still stands. We had three defensive players invited to the NFL Combine, two drafted off of one FCS team. It just that doesn't happen unless you have that kind of vision, develop players in that way, and they respond to extraordinary accountability measures, and that's what we've got going on right here. I'm so excited about what these guys are accomplishing, and yet so distraught that we haven't gotten over the hump in so many close games, and looking at and pointing the finger at myself and trying to figure out which decision or decisions would have changed that game in the Bears' favor, because these players deserve to win.
Yeah. Well, and again, I know this kind of stemmed from this. I just believe, and again, I would love to be a fly on a wall with an athletic director and a head coach in that interview process, and then see 3 years later, are you delivering on the things you said you'd be about? Yeah, everyone's going to kind of come in there and say, we're going to win games, but what is the philosophy? What is the culture like? Because those are how you win. That's how you win games. And I've talked about our conversations about the culture that you inherited when you got here. How do you fix that? Once you fix that stuff, that should start to work. But that is a commitment. That is not letting anybody get away, not letting anybody slide. And that's what I think is a big step in not just, everyone wants to say recruiting and, you know, what's their X's and O's plan, all that stuff. Yeah, you have to have that stuff, but you guys are all pretty darn good at that stuff if you get to this level. How do you stay true to who you are in that philosophy? Because that's what you truly believe will win games, and you've done that. So yeah, I'm excited to see how the rest of this goes.
I appreciate that. And it's different at every place, right? And that's the hard part for athletic directors. And what I appreciate about our athletic director and president is, you know, I clearly stated what I thought UNC's strengths and weaknesses were and the plan to win here, a more accurate way to say it was my plan to win here. And they didn't have to agree with that. And then they didn't have to support it when it looked like, I don't have any idea what I'm doing. Mm. And maybe it still does look like that to some people. But I think, you know, to really feel arm in arm with President Feinstein, athletic director Darren Dunn, and more importantly, like UNC, you know, we feel it around campus. Our football team feels, supported, and celebrated, when we do things right and we do things good. So, I couldn't be more encouraged about, you know, our ability to keep raising the level of this football program. And we have an amazing opportunity this week.
Ed, you met Michael out there. Michael.
Yeah.
He, from day one, he's been saying the Bears are beating Montana State. He just says he has a feeling. I don't know if it's some kind of weird nerd thing that he just, in the stars for him, but he is, for some reason, he honed in on that game week one. He said, I don't know what's going to happen this season, but they're going to beat Montana State.
That's interesting.
So that's weird. Take that for what it's worth.
Yeah.
If you win this weekend, you know, you got to hook, you know, high five for the Michael over there.
Yeah. There's no question. Yeah. That would be, I mean, he pays attention to things in a
weird way.
I was going to say unique.
Creepy.
Way.
Creepy way.
But some of the things that where I don't know what his interest level or like that is. And then all of a sudden he'll come up with some kind of insight and talking to him in the hallway.
Yeah.
And I think, okay, there's something.
There's something there.
Yeah. There's something to this guy.
It's more than just Legos and Star Trek.
Yeah. He's got some sneaky intuition sometimes.
Yeah. So take that for what it's worth. We'll see. But coach, best of luck for you guys. I do my picks on Friday. I have a weird feeling too, to be honest. And I think some exciting things are in store as we have 4 games left. I think it's going to be a fun finish.
I appreciate that. Our players had a great first day of practice, and that usually goes into what our opportunity will be this Saturday.
All right, my friend. Well, good luck. Go get them this weekend, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Thanks, Brady.
Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.